My wife swept a night bus at 12:30 in the morning on July 11, 1988, and less than 12 hours later, she gave birth to our first daughter. Not many women are that committed. I thank God for my wife, who has been all these years with me, and if I've done anything, it's the Lord and the woman he gave me in the bus ministry. My daughter ran part of my route today because I was gone. The one that was born almost on the bus. She is the drama queen. If she had come out, like, who was that girl got baptized this morning? She had that look on her face. That was my daughter, about one-tenth of my daughter. She's crazy. We brought over 100,000 people to church on buses in 30 years. Now, I got in the bus ministry at college with Brother your Pastor in 1982, but I had a couple years before that in my home church. So in those 30 years, a lot has happened. I've been there when it was fun, and I've been there when it wasn't fun. In the summer, it's not fun. Somehow, they never give me the air-conditioned bus. I've started six bus routes, had big days of over 400, had a lot of people come to church. In college, I quit the bus ministry every Sunday night and joined about every Tuesday. Our schedule was murderous in college. Brother Jerry and I remember one night we got done with night bus about 2 in the morning. We had college classes at 8 o'clock the next day. And I was walking toward the college after I got out of the car in the parking lot. I was so tired, I laid down. I fell asleep right there on the ground. Next thing I know, I feel this. Hey, Millen, move over. Make room for me. Your pastor laid right down next to me and said, let's go to sleep. It was up at 5 on Saturday, prayer meeting at 6:30, division captain's meeting at 7, bus worker meeting at 7:30, another meeting at 9, go straight to Chicago and visit till 10 at night, 10:30. Get home just in time for curfew, stay up, make our lists, get to bed about midnight, 12:30, get up at 4:15, go get a bus, go get people, take them to church, take them home, bring them back to church, take them back to Chicago, go back to the bus center and get eaten alive by the person who ran the bus company. She was a woman, the best man for the job. Her name was Sylvia. Sylvia, you never wanted to get chewed out by Sylvia. Her combat boots would stomp you. But then we got up the next morning, went to class at 8 o'clock, got home 2 in the morning, got up at 8, class, chapel, class, go to work from 2 to midnight, get a couple hours sleep, get up, do it again, and the weekend, we ran the buses. And I oftentimes thought, in night church, about 8 o'clock, I got 6 more hours. I'm going to die. Is it worth it? Bus kids strangle you, pull your tie, ask you for a dollar 15 times a day. They want your money, they want your time, they want everything you've got. They take your stuff. I hate bus kids. Let's go another direction. Forget about the bus ministry. And at times it wasn't very fun. But let me tell you something. When you come to the end of your life and you look back and you see what you did with your life, you're going to wish you'd done something for God. And as hard as it is on the weekends, and as hard as it is serving God, when I was a teenager, a preacher once said, you think it's hard to serve God? Try serving the devil a while. Amen. Oh, yeah. You young people. Oh, it's all exciting to watch everything on TV and see the movie stars and all the money. But you don't see them when they're miserable, when they hate themselves, and when they commit suicide, and when their marriages break up, and when their kids are going to the devil, and when they're as miserable and rotten and hateful as they can be. You don't see that part. But you see a man like your pastor who served God all these years. Now, he doesn't have all the nice things, but he's got a wonderful heritage. He's got a great retirement program. It's out of this world. So I'm going to talk about the bus ministry tonight. You know, everybody in this church can be involved in the bus ministry. You don't have to ride the bus to be involved in the bus ministry. You captains liked that statement, didn't you? You can pray and be involved in the bus ministry. You can give your money and be involved in the bus ministry. If you don't have health, you can make posters to give to take on the, for people to take on the bus. You can give candy to the bus kids. You can do multitude of things without being on that bus or visiting. But everybody can be involved in the bus ministry. Let's turn to 2 Corinthians, please. And when you get to 2 Corinthians chapter 4, I'm going to pray. Because I'll get talking, I'll forget to pray, and we do need the Lord involved in this one. You know, after all these years, I found out he's a pretty good person to run with. Good to have him on your side. 2 Corinthians chapter 4, let's pray. Lord, thank you for your goodness and your kindness and your grace and the love you give us when we don't deserve it. Thank you for these good people who, for the most part, love you, Lord, and want to do your will and want to do all they can in this area to reach people. I pray, Lord, you bless them tonight. Bless the preaching of your word, and I pray that you'd be glorified and that in the end, all the glory go to you. In Jesus' name, amen. 2 Corinthians 4:17. Now that I'm getting old and need my spectacles. For our light affliction, which is but for a moment, worketh for us a far more exceeding and eternal weight of glory. While we look not at the things which are seen, but at the things which are not seen. For the things which are seen are temporal, but the things which are not seen are eternal. That's a great verse. Oh, a few years after Christ ascended to heaven, probably 70 or 80 or 90 years, in the 100s, a man named Algirius Pomponius, an Italian young man, 21 years old, was in jail for his faith. This Italian man, Algirius Pomponius, would not recant. He would not say that he did not believe in Jesus Christ. And in prison, he wrote a diary and told how that, you know, I'm 21, I could just recant and not mean it and go out and make a difference in this world. But I will not deny my Lord. And if I stay in prison, if I die in prison, it's the right thing to do. And that man was martyred at the age of 21. Nowadays, the average man is around 28, 29, or 30 before he grows up enough to get married and have some sense. It wasn't that way 60, 70 years ago in this country. It's a shame that a man like Nathan Hale, at the age of 21, made the statements he made and made the difference in our country he made. But Algirius Pomponius wrote this diary, and he was killed at the age of 21, and it seemed like his life was a waste. But 1,500 years later, in a jail, another man was imprisoned for his faith. And that man read the story that was preserved over the years of Algirius Pomponius, the Italian martyr, who died, I believe, in the year 121 AD. And this man in prison decided, because this other man, Algirius Pomponius, if he can stay in prison for his faith, I can stay in prison for my faith. He was influenced 1,500 years later. And that man wrote a book called The Pilgrim's Progress. Next to the Bible, it is the second most selling book in the world. Most influential book other than the Word of God. And that man was influenced by a man who he never met, who lived 1,500 years before him. And that story I tell you for this reason. In the bus ministry, you don't always see immediate results. You don't always see kids grow up and become what you want them to become. But you never know, because your lifetime is not all there is to it. I'm going to tell you some stories tonight about the bus ministry that happened to me. You know, it seems like your life is spent in vain sometimes, but it's not all there is to life. And the bus ministry is a ministry where you can influence people long after you're dead. And no other way to live than to influence people. Turn to Colossians a minute. My first plus about the bus ministry, Colossians 3. These are probably my favorite verses in the Bible. Colossians 3, chapter 1, verse 1, chapter 3. If ye then be risen with Christ, seek those things which are above, where Christ sitteth at the on the right hand of God. Set your affection on things above, not on things on the earth. For ye are dead, and your life is hid with Christ in God. When Christ, read those next four words with me, who is our life, shall appear. Jesus Christ should be our life. He should be our life. And our affection ought to be set on things above. And the one thing that keeps me going in the bus ministry is not that I get a lot of glory out of it. He gets a lot of glory out of it. And that's all that really matters. In the bus ministry, boy, I got so many things to say. I gotta get out of here so you can give me some money. What is your life? Movies? What is your life? Getting the next thing? What is your life? Things? Four-wheelers? Trucks? Cars? Your life ought to be Jesus Christ. And I know part of those other things are part of life, but Jesus Christ ought to be our life. We ought to look for eternal things. Comfort. I enjoyed this afternoon. I didn't have to ride a hot bus. But you know, I can't live that way the rest of my life. I got to go do something. I got to shoot something, make something happen, go do something. I want to see something happen with my life. I don't want to end up 60, 70, 85, 90 years old saying, yeah, I watched a lot of movies. I saw the good ones. I owned a lot of trucks. They're all rusted. They're in the junkyard. I did all the good stuff. But there's no one that I can point to and say I influenced that person's life. I don't want to live that way. I want to please the Lord. I was in Chicago on Elizabeth Street at the corner of Elizabeth and Chicago Avenue. And I invited some people who were sitting on these steps, about four or five steps up. I invited these people to church and they laughed at me. Those of you bus captains know people sometimes laugh at you. They know you're a preacher, so they light their cigarette up and blow the smoke in your face. They cuss a little extra because they know you're the preacher. And they laughed at me and said, I'm not going to go to that church. And I invited that family time and time and time again. They never wanted to come to church. One day I found out that their cousin was shot in a gang. And all of a sudden they were interested in coming to church. You know, as many times as you invite people, something's going to happen in their life if you pray. That God will take that thing and use it to get them to Jesus Christ. And I invited them again, and they started coming to church. It was the Blanco family. There were 10 children. Now, that's the kind of family you want on your bus. Because they will fill your bus. That Blanco family started coming, and mostly they drove into church. And, it's a long, long story. But they got saved. And eventually the father got saved. And in one spring program, they got so excited about winning a car at the Spanish church that they brought over 600 visitors in 7 weeks. That'd be kind of a nice deal, wouldn't it? I remember on the last, every day, every week, they would give me a $100 bill and say, I want you to rent us a bus so we can fill it tomorrow. And on the last day of the program, they brought one full bus and 21 vans full of people. 121 people came to church that day that I know of. A girl named Rocio was 10 when I led her to Christ. It was one of those children, Blanco, Rocio Blanco. Every week I see her in church still, 25 years later. She's got four children. They all go to our Christian school. She and her husband are working in our church. And a little 10-year-old bus kid whose family said, get out of here. We don't want to go to your church. They came every week. And I was telling your preacher that the mother of Rocio has 25 grandchildren now. 24 of them are girls. And Rocio just had the first boy. The 25th was the first boy. That spoiled kid. I feel bad for him. Juanice, Rocio's older sister, she's in our church. Her husband, 4 children, they all go to our Christian school. And it was just 25 years ago, we kept on going by every week. And they're in our church. I talked to Rocio a few weeks ago, and I said, someone wants me to write an article about our church paper, about stores in the bus ministry. And she said, oh, Brother Matt, we've gone to Mexico, and over 100 of our family members have gotten saved down in Mexico. There's over 100 people I've never met that I know of in Mexico that I'll meet in heaven because I happen to go by their house every week in Chicago, invite that family, and the mushroom explosion of people getting saved. I will find out in heaven how many hundreds of people got saved from that one family. Just a few blocks down the street, I went to the 4th floor every week on a Saturday, and I met a girl named Ophelia. Can you hear me? Ophelia was a little 7-year-old girl, Spanish girl, and every week I went by her house, her grandmother would say, Católica, Católica, they're Catholic. And I said, that's okay, Catholics can come to our church. There's a lot of Catholic people come to our church. They ride the bus, they enjoy it. You can come to our church. She said, quítate, get out of here. Every stinking bus kid lives on the 4th floor, don't they? I invited her for 8 months every Saturday. Ophelia never came, except one Saturday, her grandmother was in Mexico. And her mother said, si, mañana, autobus. Went up those 4 flights of stairs and got Ophelia to come to church, and she brought a visitor. Her visitor was a little girl named, I believe it was Ananita, or Anna. Anna had a brother named Carlos. And Anna and Carlos kept coming, but Ophelia didn't. And for 8 months, I visited one girl who would never come. And on the day she did, she brought a visitor. And that little boy, Carlitos, grew up and became one of our division leaders in our bus ministry. He ran Division 4. He was in charge of 10 buses. And they would have big days of over 600. All because one little girl that never came brought a visitor one time. And that little boy grew up, became a division leader in our bus ministry, and he ran 10 bus routes. So you never know. The bus ministry is a blessing because you never know who you're going to reach, because you're not the one that reaches them. God is. He just needs you to go. That same person was related, or Anita grew up, and now she's in our church with her husband and children. Every week, come to church. Just a little 6-year-old girl, 5-4-year-old kid. Well, who are they? Just another number? No, they grow up and have children. They get married. They pay tithe. They go to church. They have burdens and problems, and they need preaching. In that same building, a man named Jesus Rodriguez came to church, right on the corner of Elizabeth and Chicago Avenue. Jesus Rodriguez always told me no. And I guess he went off to Mexico, but I saw him in church a couple years ago. He says, you remember me? I said, no. He said, yeah, I lived in that corner building. You always invited me, and I always told you no. So I'm glad you're here. He said, I'm visitation director at our Spanish church now. We have a Spanish church, runs about 2,500 people a week. And he's the visitation director in the Spanish church. Saw him the other day in the bus office. He had his card like this, and I said, what are you doing? He says, I'm in charge of 40 bus routes. I want to see what our attendance was today. That's a man that never rode my bus that I know of, but I invited him. You never know. You don't know what God's doing in the lives of people. You know, if you want to sit around on Saturday and do nothing, I mean, if I were 19, 20 years old, a young man, I'd be ashamed of myself if I didn't go do something. 2, 3, 4 hours on a Saturday. Hand a few tracks out. You never know what God's going to do with it. You might find out in 20 years that there's somebody you handed a track to that's doing something big for God. And God used you to do it. And you'll get a blessing out of that. Brother Hiles used to call it clipping coupons. At pastor school, a young lady who used to visit my route, Adelaida Garcia, She brought a lady up to me, and the lady said, "Do you remember me?" And I said, "Yes, I do. Your name is Carmela Abarca." She was 16 years old when I used to pick her up on the corner of Fry and Pearson. No, Bishop and Pearson. No, Bishop and Fry. Somewhere. It was in Chicago somewhere, I know it was. It was a red brick building, three stories high. She lived on the second floor in the front. Her name was Carmela, a little 16-year-old girl. Says, "I remember you." She rode my bus for just a short while. She said, "I'm a pastor's wife in Cuernavaca, Mexico now." And she came to pastor school, and she wanted to meet me and tell me what happened with her life. I didn't have a whole lot to do with her life, except I was the bus captain, and I happened to have a bus the day she rode. And the few times she came, I didn't know much about her, except God knew that she was going to be a pastor's wife someday, and he needed a bus captain on that street to get her to come to church. I was on the corner of Medill and Cicero in Chicago at a McDonald's. And a girl named Araceli Garcia, who used to ride my bus when she was 9, little crazy Araceli, you remember her. She had twin sisters. And every time we took her home after night bus, we'd go in the house, turn the light on, and 15 zillion cockroaches would leave. I mean, they were everywhere. I'm afraid they were going to... I wouldn't have slept in the house. They carried the bed away with me on it. I go in that house, and they were behind the hinges on the door. You take a picture away from the wall, you got 7,000. I'm looking at you. I couldn't live there. That's how they lived. Their dad had left them, just them and their mother. But Araceli, she decided to ride my bus that day, and I hadn't seen her in several years. She's probably 23 or 4 by now. She brought a man by the name of Sergio Corona. He had a ponytail down the middle of his back. He was probably early 20s, was a gangbanger. And I found out that Sergio and his wife were separated. She had said to him several times, "I'm tired of it. I'm out of here. You tell me you're going to change, you never do." And Sergio got saved. And within just a few weeks, he had a Christian haircut, had a suit and tie, and Sergio decided to go be with his wife in Virginia. And last I found out, he was the Spanish pastor of a church on the East Coast. And all because an old bus kid who came back to church said, "I got a friend, would you get him saved?" And he became a Spanish pastor. Got back with his wife, 2 daughters, in church. Because I happened to have a bus, and he happened to ride it, and I didn't invite him. One of my stinking bus kids from 10 years before invited him. It's great to see stuff like that happen. I was in Chicago getting my wife's ring cleaned. It's a diamond ring I'd bought her in Chicago. Our 15th anniversary, I bought it for her because it was... it was a bigger diamond, and I couldn't afford that in college. And I went to get it cleaned at a jewelry store in Chicago, and a young lady waited on me, Spanish lady. And I had to fill out some paperwork, and she brought the paperwork back and said, "Matt, I know a brother Matt in Indiana." I said, "What's your name?" She said, "Alma Garcia." I said, "How's Maria doing, your twin sister?" Born on January 5, 1970. I said, "I remember your birthday, I remember your sister, I remember your mother, Sophia." One of my bus kids grew up, and now she was working at a jewelry store. And I happened to meet her, and among 7 million people in Chicago, I happened to find her. That was a blessing. And she still remembered Brother Matt, who picked her up on the bus every week. I was had my first big day of 200. Brother Jerry got up one morning and said, "Millen, I'm tired of hearing all these excuses." You know how he is. "Every bus captain in this bus division is going to come to me and tell me why he can't reach his goal. I don't want to see your face. Get out of here and get your goal." It was about 4:15 in the morning. "Good morning. Welcome to you. Get out of here. I don't want you to reach your goal." That kind of inspired me. I wanted to get it just to get him off my back. I was having this big day of 200. Man, I prayed all week. I quit eating on Sunday the week before, and I fasted all week, and I prayed, and I said, "Oh, God, you got to do something." The week before, I had 69. I was supposed to have 200. People were laughing at me. I said, "I'm going to do it, bless God. I'm going to make this happen." So I visited all week. Man, I visited. I mean, I prayed all week. I visited Friday, visited Saturday. The end of Saturday, I think I had 197 signups. And I said, Lord, you got to do the rest. Next day, long story short, about 7:30 in the morning, 278 passenger buses rolled up. I didn't have enough room for everyone, but back then we could get by with putting a few extra people on the bus. Brother man, it's pretty crowded in here. Shut up, kid. How come I'm on the third layer down, brother man? Because you're little. Shut up. Get under that seat and be quiet. I'll give you an extra candy bar. Shut up. About 8:30, one of the young ladies named Adelaida was 16. She met me, and she had 93 people on a bus. People I never met. I got on the bus, and I saw nothing but people. No aisle, just people. Moms, dads, kids, 37 adults on that bus that day. Some of them were people who had ridden on my bus before, but it was one street, a block and a half long, and they all came off that one street. I said, what did you do? She said, you said we're supposed to have 200, so I visited every night this week. We put 113 people on that bus. We had 207 that day. And that teenage girl grew up, got married, and her husband now has the largest bus ministry in the Spanish church. They run 3 buses every Sunday. Their son was one of my students at college. He's in the bus ministry. So you never know. A lady named Carmen Ramos, she was a Puerto Rican woman. If she ever got after you, you knew you got cussed out by a Puerto Rican. She was the kind of woman, if she lost her job, she'd have one the next day. And you better give her one or else you'd be dead. She had 3 children, Ida, David, and Filiberto. Mrs. Ramos came to me one day on a Saturday and said, you got to pray. She said, my husband's leaving me. He served papers to me today. And she was crying, and she knew that her life was just about to get blown apart. And I said, I'll pray for you. The next morning, she came down the steps. I think she hit maybe 2 or 3 of the 15 steps on the way down. Brother Matt, you won't believe it! I said, this woman was, she was rather portly. She was not a skinny woman. And when she came at me down them steps, I'm like, I'm dead meat. She's coming too fast, and she won't be able to stop, and she's going to kill me. I was probably 130 pounds, dripping wet and full of bananas. She said, my husband's coming to church today. She said, it's a miracle. He never was going to come to church. He came and got saved that day. Their daughter, Ida, grew up. Just 3-4 years ago, on the way to Maine, we stopped. I called her on the phone. She's at one of our graduates' churches in New Jersey. She has 3 daughters, married in the church. And that was just a 10-year-old red-haired Puerto Rican girl that used to hate me. It's a blessing. I was on Noble Street visiting, one hot summer day, and a girl named Sasha, I met her second floor. And I invited her to church. She was 9 years old. She got saved that day. And kept coming. Got her in our Christian school. And over the years, you know, I got away from that bus route. And I kept in touch with her. Every August 15th, I called her, wrote her a note. It was her birthday. August 15, 1974. And three, 4 summers ago, she called and said, hey, Brother Matt, I'm going to get married. Would you marry my husband and me? My fiance. And so I set it up, went up there and did a rehearsal the night before, and I did her wedding. And her husband said, I don't know what it is about you. She just always liked, you know, she just thought the greatest thing in the world was to have Brother Matt marry us someday. And I said, that's bus kids for you. I was on La Crosse Street in 1993. I invited a boy named Junior to church. He said, my mom goes to some Baptist church in town here. I've still got the list of 106 names He and his two brothers were 67, 68, and 69 on that list. Found out they had 7 children in the family. He finally came with his mother. She was pregnant for the 7th child. She had the baby, and a week later, they rode the bus the first time. Junior grew up, came to our college, and graduated and married. His sister's at our college. For a while, was my bus worker. They moved to Hammond, got in church, and the whole family got saved. And on one day, when they rode our bus, there was 29 family members from that family on our bus. These people get excited, and they bring their family. I can't tell you how many hundreds and thousands of people come to church just because you do this. Hey, you want to ride my bus? Now, you don't want to go out there and say, you don't want to ride my bus, do you? I wouldn't. Right, right. You got to come. It's exciting. I'm going to give you candy. You got to come on my bus. Hey, where is it? You want some? You want some? You can't have my keys. I got to get home. You got to get excited about it. Hey. You want some candy? No, you don't. You don't want candy, do you? Only good-looking people get candy. Don't insult them too much. Always give them candy. But you get excited. And when you get excited, they want to come with you. And when they come with you, they get saved. When they get saved, they're going to grow up someday. They're going to become something. I was on Chestnut Street. I met a lady named, well, we called her Mama. Her name was Janice. Mama made the best sweet tea you ever drank. She was all, and she made fried chicken. So every Saturday, fried chicken, sweet tea. And now, I had lots of mamas on the bus route. I had a Puerto Rican mama, and a Mexican mama, and a white mama, and a Southern mama, and a black mama. Miss Anna was the black mama. Every Sunday morning, fried chicken and an RC. Come on the bus with a fried chicken and an RC. Mama Knight, the Southern mama, would make a 7-course meal every Saturday. I mean, cornbread and mashed potatoes and green beans, and oh my goodness. When I took that route, she had a meal laid out every Saturday, and I said, you know, I can't build a bus route sitting at your table. So she got to the point where she would put it on a plate with tinfoil over it and call me Shadow, because that's all she saw me. I was the Shadow. One day I smelled something in my car. I said, what is that bad smell? I had taken that plate of food and stuck it in the back window and forgot about it for about 4 weeks. Mama's night cooking was very good, unless it was 4 weeks old in your back window. Mama Knight went to heaven a few years ago. She had 10 children. They were already grown. And every week she came with 3 loaves of bread that she made peanut butter and jelly sandwiches. Not a very healthy woman. I went to her house one day, and I thought she was going to die. She's white as a ghost. And she couldn't do much on the route, but she did make 3 loaves of bread every week. Peanut butter and jelly sandwiches. And she fed those kids. And she was the bus mama. My Puerto Rican mama made me arroz con gandules. I don't know if you speak Spanish, any of you, but that's rice and beans. And the Mexican mama made me tortas and all that Mexican food. But they all came because they felt like they could contribute somehow on the bus. About a year ago, I was in church, and a man named Tony met me, and he says, hey, you remember me? I'm Tony. I said, Tony, where did you live? He said, oh, a long time ago, I lived on Huron Street. I said, Tony Baloney, fat and phony, sitting on a pony, eating macaroni. He said, yeah, you remember that? I said, yeah, every time I saw you, big fat kid, about 6 years old, I said, Tony Baloney, fat and phony, sitting on a pony, eating macaroni. He said, yeah, you remember that? He's about 30 years old now, come to our church. He's still Tony Baloney, fat and phony, sitting on the pony eating macaroni. I was on 45th and Honorary. Met a lady named Bertha. She has several children. She has a daughter with 7 kids, Mrs. Tamayo. She said, I used to live on Ashland and Pearson. I said, yeah, above the barbecue pit, 2nd floor in the back. I said, I know you. I said, I went to your house one day, and your daughter said, hey, would you like some of this soup? Sure, I'm hungry. I was always hungry. Never had any money. I'm eating this soup. I said, man, this is good. What is it? Oh, she said, Brother Matt, you remember that goat that was in the backyard last week? You're eating them. Oh, man. That's good food. Can I have some more? I was in a house one day, fourth floor. They're all on the fourth floor. I said, man, that smells good. What is that? Oh, Brother Matt, would you like some? Now, at this point, you can't say no because you offend them. I said, sure. Come over to the oven. Open the oven. A whole pig head right there. Eyeballs looking at me. Teeth. The whole thing. Here. She takes a knife, cuts off part of the jaw. Take this. It's good. Thanks, kid. Appreciate that. I don't think I went back there. They didn't deserve to come to church. Yeah, the things you see in the bus ministry. Bertha Juarez, the lady I met whose daughter fed me goat soup, she came to our college and graduated in the Spanish program and off and on rides my bus. Still, 25 years later. You know when they get saved, they stay saved? You know when they get saved, their children oftentimes get saved and go to church? You know, where would you be without your brother Ross, who started the church 36 years ago now? I hate to think what this area would be like without his influence. That doesn't mean you fall down and say, oh, Mr. Ross. You say, oh, thank God he had a servant that came by and decided to give his life to Jesus Christ. And you're going to want people years from now to say, I'm so glad you listened to God. Let me just give you some observations. I'll be done. Decide now what will be important in the end and do it. You know that song, only one life will soon be past, only what's done for Christ will last? You know that's true. I didn't spend my 20s and 30s pursuing a career and climbing a ladder. I spent it on buses in the ministry. And I realized secular people have to work a job, and they're not all in the ministry, but the truth is this, we're all Christians. First, you're a Christian. And just because you don't get a check from the church doesn't mean you're not in full-time Christian service. Everyone here is a full-time Christian, right? And as a full-time Christian, you do what Christians do. You reach other people for Jesus Christ. Whether it's at the Ford plant, at some shop where you fix cars, as you put flooring down, as you go on the streets, you're a testimony and a Christian. So you got to decide now what's important to you. Next, if I were a teenager, I'd give some of my weekends to the ministry. Man, if I was 14, 15, 16-year-old boy, I'd come to this man right here and say, preacher, what can I do? You don't have a full-time job. You don't have a mortgage payment. You don't have a car payment. You don't have a wife. You don't have children. You got lots of time. Put the Wii and the Xbox down and come to the church and find out what you can do for the preacher. I'm so sick and tired of, man, I killed 17 billion communists, or whatever they are that you kill. I ran over, I got the baddest, meanest truck on the whole internet. Big deal. Big deal. Grow up. Play your games 30 minutes a day and go do something for God. This word teenager is a bad word. Never used to be teenagers in the 1950s and earlier. It was young men and young ladies. Just because you're 12 doesn't mean you have to be stupid for 8 years. Amen? Why don't you decide to be a young man and grow up and be responsible? Instead of being stupid. I understand young teenagers can be stupid. But they don't have to be real stupid. Stupid is, who cares? Real stupid is, hang this. That's right. Sensible is, I got to live the rest of my life somewhere and do something. I might as well get God involved in it. And if you could give 2 or 3 hours on a Saturday, look, man, you're not crippled by arthritis. You're not messed up emotionally, usually. You haven't got 3 or 4, usually. You haven't, You don't have a lot of baggage in life? Buddy, get involved. This man will give you all kinds of things you can do. If it's just sitting in his office writing out names of people that you can go visit. So if I were a teenager, I'd want my pastor to give me something to do. If I were in my 20s and I was single, I'd be more involved. Did you know that 20-something people do more stupid things to wreck their life than most anybody else? You know more parents are frustrated over 20-somethings that don't have any purpose in life? You realize more parents have grief over some of you that are 20, 21, 22 that don't give a flip about God? And they're like, what have I done wrong? Get involved in something to God that's eternal. If I were in my 20s and single, I'd definitely commit my weekends to the Lord. If I were married with children, I'd find some way to involve my kids in the ministry. A life-changing ministry where my kids see that my faith is real. A ministry my kids will see, you know what? Dad got that person saved and brought them to church, and now they're different. Wow, this is a great life. If I were older and unable to work on a bus route, I'd give money to help if I had it. I'd pray. I'd teach a Sunday school class. I'd be a blessing to the workers. I'd give candy. I'd make 3 loaves of bread and say, here, bus captain, give them out on your bus. Everybody can be involved in the bus ministry. You don't have to ride a bus. You just have to have your heart in it. I know a church where a man, his ministry, he's older, can't be on a bus. His ministry is to make sure that at least one bus is paid for, fueled up, clean, and on the road every Sunday. He pays for it. And that's his part of the bus ministry. Anybody can be involved. You know, I gave you a lot of stories, said a lot of things, but the bottom line is, I'm the one that did that, you didn't. But you got to decide what you're going to do. God has a wonderful, wonderful ministry out there. Little, medium-sized, big, but the bottom line is you've got to get out and say, you know what? I'm going to be a part of this thing. The bus ministry is great. I didn't tell you. I grew up with a family of 10 kids. No running water, no indoor toilets, and somebody came and invited me to church on a bus. Why is the bus ministry important to me? Because it was a bus that got me to church. And a little bus kid that never went back to that church again. They came one time. And what they don't know is that one bus kid they brought has brought over 100,000 people to church. Seen hundreds saved. And they got me saved. Now, who is it that you can bring? Or influence? Or what is it you can do to be a part of reaching the people God wants you to reach? It's a great life, preacher. Have Brother Jerry come up. I don't know what decision you need to make. But whether it's large or small, you can have something to do with reaching people in this area.